the book of Deuteronomy tonight. So we're going to look at chapter 33 and 34 tonight. And then next week, Lord willing, we'll do a whole review of the book of Deuteronomy. So looking forward to that. And then we'll jump right into Joshua after that in a couple of weeks from today. And Michael Lindsay has volunteered to jump in and help with that. So look forward to looking at Joshua with him. So Deuteronomy 33, this is really the last words of Moses. Last week, remember, we covered the Song of Moses, and that was a song that God told him to teach the children of Israel as a witness against them. And there's a lot of things in that song that is going to play out in their history. So it really connected well to chapter 31 and what God told Moses was going to happen after he died. So write a song, and so we did that. And that was kind of, we remember songs pretty well, and so maybe a memory device and things of that nature. So chapter 33 contains Moses' blessing to the people before he dies. So what is the best thing Moses can do before he dies? Well, bless the people, give them kind of one last exhortation to do what's right, because in chapter 34, God's going to bury him at, he's still healthy, but a ripe old age of 120. Does this remind you of any other book in the Bible or any other story where right before someone dies, they give his sons a blessing? Okay, so Jacob gives his 12 sons of Israel, at the end of Genesis 49. And it's amazing all of the parallels to Genesis 49 that's contained here in Deuteronomy 33. So that may be a good kind of flip back and forth if you want to do that. But this is very, very similar to that, Jacob blessing his 12 sons before he dies. Okay, so verses 1 through 5 are going to be his opening words before he gives the blessing. And then he's going to bless the tribes of Israel in verses 6 to 25. And then he's going to end in 26 to 29 with kind of final words, basically telling them there is no one like God. And so elevating God for the reason of you need to serve him, why wouldn't you serve him? So that's kind of where we're going in this chapter, and hopefully we'll have time for chapter 34 as well. Okay, so looking at the first five verses, Moses blesses them before his death. And then beginning in verse 2, what do you see Moses doing kind of right out of the gate? How would you summarize verse 2?
He's reminding them when they were camped in the valley before they went out the first time, it's Mount Paran. And the cloud lifted up from the tabernacle, and then they followed this pillar of fire. So, but it is about his power, and I don't really understand much of the 10,000s of saints from his right hand and the fire of God.
Okay, so good. He's really focusing in on Sinai and the display of God's power at that event. And it says there he came from the midst of 10,000 holy ones. So the idea maybe with God coming from the presence of all those holy ones in heaven, coming down and showing his majesty and power before his people. So again, he starts with the power of God and how mighty he is in that first covenant that he made with them on Mount Sinai. Then in verse 3, he speaks of God's love, right? This mighty, powerful God chose you and loves you. What an amazing thing. All your holy ones are in your hand, and they follow in your steps. Everyone receives your word. So then he focuses in kind of the latter part, that God is the lawgiver. Into verse 4, Moses charged us with the law of possession for the assembly of Jacob. And then verse 5, God is king over Jeshurun. So when the heads of the people were gathered, the tribes of Israel together. So that's usually not a word that we use very often to describe Israel, but Jeshurun is kind of that idea. He is the deliverer. He's the one that saves. So that's all kind of wrapped up. So in the first 5 verses, Moses is telling them how great God is, right? So if this is your last words to the people, doesn't it make sense to help them realize this is who we serve? He is powerful. He loves us. He gave us his word. He gave us the law. And then finally there in verse 5, he is our king. So this is the greatest king we'll ever have, right? So then he's going to go from there to bless the different tribes. But any comments or thoughts there through verse 5?
He's also reminding them that God's with them.
Yes.
I can see that in verse 2. He's reminding them of how God showed them.
Absolutely. And isn't that comforting, right? In lieu of what they are about to do and cross over the Jordan and try to take the land of Canaan as he has promised them, God's with you, he's powerful, he loves you, serve him. So that's how he begins. And then we start blessing the tribes of Israel. So in verse 6, he blesses the tribe of Reuben. May Reuben live and not die, nor his men be few. So what do we know about Reuben the person from the book of Genesis? Okay, so he's the oldest. He's the son of Leah. And remember, what did he do that was not great, that got him in trouble? You remember? Okay, that was the other two. That was Simeon and Levi. Reuben went into Jacob's handmaid, Bilhah, which was Rachel's assistant, is how I picture that. So that got him kind of knocked down, that instead of receiving the blessing. So basically, the blessing is, may you continue to exist, and may you not be few in number. May you always be large in number. Then he goes, who would you expect next? Simeon, right? He's next in line, but it jumps right to Judah. And we'll talk about the order of the tribes kind of there at the end. I have much to say about that, but it is interesting to see the order of this. A little bit different than Genesis 49. So the blessing of Judah, and how does Moses bless Judah? What are some things that stand out to you there in verse 7?
Remain among his people, that kind of thing, and look after them. But then it says, let his hands be sufficient for him. They didn't get land. You know, what do they usually do with your hands? You know, so maybe it'd be directing him how he's supposed to serve the people to help against his enemies.
Okay, so you have, hear, O Lord, the voice of Judah. So again, oh God, listen to his prayers, right? His requests. And then second there, and bring him to his people. Bring kind of the people of Judah together. With his hands he contended for him or for them. And may you be a help against his adversaries. So the idea of God, may you always hear them. And may you bless them, defend them, right, against their enemies. Judah is going to be the largest tribe of Israel. And he is receiving the kind of the big blessing here. So Judah would do the best out of all the tribes. If we read kind of there in Joshua and in on to Judges, we really see Judah did the best out of the 12. Okay, then we jump to Levi, who gets four verses for Levi, 8 to 11. He blesses them for standing up for God and killing their brethren in the golden calf incident, right? And it starts out, let your Thummim and your Urim belong to your godly man. So what is the Thummim and the Urim? Any idea on that? Okay, so the Urim and the Thummim would be kind of two things in the breastplate of the high priest.
And they would ask a question and it would say yes or no.
Yes, it's kind of like that. We don't know exactly how that worked. Probably the best clue is in 1 Samuel when David has the high priest and he would ask, ask God if it's okay if we take this land. And so someone compared it to if you have like two quarters and they both show up heads, then it's good. If they both show up tail, that's kind of the idea. So we don't know exactly how that worked, but that was a big help in understanding what the will of God was. So may your Urim and Thummim always belong to a godly man. And then he has... teaching Israel the law, that would be one of the roles, right, of the Levites, helping out with the sacrifices. And then he asked God to destroy those who rise up against them. Now, what is true about the tribe of Levi concerning the land of Canaan? Okay, so they were not allotted a specific section of land. Right, they were allotted, 48 cities? I think each tribe gets four cities, something like that. And so they would be scattered throughout the land. So doesn't that make sense in what he says there? There in verse 11, shatter the loins of those who rise up against them and those who hate him so that they will not rise again. So it's basically asking God to protect, not to enlarge, because they didn't have any territory to enlarge, but to protect them. Okay, then we go all the way to the end of the sons in verse 12 to the tribe of Benjamin. And Moses asked God to give Benjamin security and safety. So what are some things that jump out to you about Benjamin? What would Benjamin kind of be known for? Anything come to mind? Okay, so yes, that's kind of the negative about Benjamin in the book of Judges. The whole tribe almost gets wiped out due to their wickedness. He was one of the favorite sons, right? He was one of the sons of Rachel. And the city of Jerusalem would have been in the tribe of Benjamin. And so Benjamin would kind of become the kind of the capital city, if that makes sense at all. So the capital city would be in the tribe of Benjamin. So needed protecting for sure. So security and safety. And then who do we have in 13 to 17? Joseph. So do you remember the tribe of Joseph? So what's with the tribe of Joseph? What happened there? Okay, good. So remember the story that Joseph was the son, not Reuben, not the firstborn, but he was the one that got the double blessing, right? And so instead of Joseph receiving a blessing, his two sons received a blessing, Manasseh and Ephraim, right? Which one was older, Manasseh or Ephraim? Got a 50-50 shot. Manasseh, that's it. So Manasseh is the oldest, but remember the story where he puts his hands on the right hand on Manasseh and the left, and he crosses them? So now his right hand's on Ephraim, and then Joseph's like, oh, you got it wrong, Dad, you know, trying to remove his hands. Said, nope, this is how it needs to be. So Ephraim was the one that kind of got the greater blessing out of the two. So instead of Ephraim and Manasseh, we just kind of combine them with Joseph. So ask God to give Joseph the best. Let God's favor come to the crown of Joseph, the one distinguished among his brothers. Joseph certainly stood out, right, among his brothers and how he behaved. And so a lot of this, as we kind of go back and forth to Genesis 49, what are some applications that you think of as we read 400 years later from when Jacob blessed his children, and now we kind of see the same kind of blessings on the tribes? Any points of application kind of pop out at you from that observation?
It reminds me of how military the setup was when they moved.
Okay.
The tribes remained a force.
Yes.
Within God's people, all the way from Jacob, Israel, all the way to Moses, and would continue in that way as they inherited their land. But
okay.
It shows that God had a very special relationship with each one.
Yeah, good. Maybe you also see the actions of the fathers, the actions of Reuben or Joseph. They had a great impact 400 years later, right? And so our actions today can have an impact for many, many years to come. If I kind of think about my family, I am extremely blessed with a grandfather who served the Lord, with my mom, my dad, my siblings, who I look up to greatly. Just what a blessing it was that started way back when, because someone stood for the Lord and worshiped the Lord, and then look at that family tree. So what a powerful impact I think that should have on us. And then Joseph will have success in battle, pushing the people to the ends of the earth, and Ephraim will be blessed more than Manasseh. All right, may need to keep going here. So then we have which two tribes in 18 and 19? Who do we jump to after Joseph? Okay, you got Zebulun and Issachar. Issachar was born first, but Zebulun is mentioned first. I just find that interesting. I don't know what to make of that. But that's for you to figure out. And that's also the case in Genesis 49. Zebulun was mentioned before Issachar. It says, they will offer sacrifices to God. They will be blessed with abundance by the sea. And so you kind of see where they are located, maybe in the back of your Bible if you have a map of the 12 tribes. Kind of see that by the Sea of Galilee and maybe by the Mediterranean Sea as well. Then we jump to the blessing of Gad in 20 and 21. Blessed be the one who enlarges Gad's territory. He will get the first portion, the ruler's portion. So Gad, how does that work out? How did Gad get the first portion? Do you remember where Gad was located? Okay, so they're on the east of the Jordan River, not part of the land of Canaan, right? Not a part of the promised land. So how did they get first choice, located on the east of the Jordan.
They took the east first.
Okay, good. Good. Exactly. So the idea of Moses conquering Og and Bashan and wiping out that territory, and you got Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh saying, this looks great to us. We'll camp over here. So they kind of get the first portion in that. The ruler's portion got their land first. And then the blessing of Dan in verse 22. Dan is compared to a lion's cub. He leaps from Bashan, maybe describing their conquest of the city of Laish, which was near Bashan. You remember the sad thing about the tribe of Dan and what happened to them in the story of Judges? They were allotted a territory that was to the, by the Mediterranean Sea, to the west. And they, instead of conquering the people conquered them. And the people told Dan, you're not allowed to live here because we were here first. And Dan says, ah, phooey. And so they go up north and they basically conquer a city. And so Dan is located way up north. Remember this saying, like, from Dan to Beersheba? So Dan way up north, Beersheba south. That'd be the kind of the land of Canaan. So maybe that's what it's talking about. He leaps from Bashan. That would be kind of the area there that they took. Verse 23, the blessing of Naphtali, full of favor and blessing from the Lord, take possession of the sea and of the south. And then blessing of Asher there in 24 and 25. May God greatly bless them. May you live a life of leisure. Which tribe, if you looked at it closely, which tribe is missing? Simeon. Yeah. Simeon is missing from this list. And what happened with the territory of Simeon? You remember? It was located far south. And basically what ended up happening is the tribe of Judah ended up swallowing up the territory of Simeon. So you kind of see that if you have a map. And so in Genesis 49, in verses 5 through 7, I think it was Brother Wayne that mentioned that they just did evil to the town of Shechem because of what they did to their sister. Remember that story? And so their punishment in Genesis 49 is God will scatter them. Well, that's exactly what happened to Simeon and Levi. Levi kind of helped their cause by killing their brethren who worshiped the golden calf on Mount Sinai. So they got kind of a blessing. Simeon is just nowhere to be seen because God scattered them and they're kind of swallowed up with Judah. Okay, so if you look at kind of how these tribes are mentioned, it's basically looking at geographical order, and that's why we're not doing chronological order, but kind of where they are positioned when they enter the land. That makes sense? Kind of going from the north all the way down to the south, ending with Simeon. I have other notes about all that, but I may just go ahead and skip that. Any thoughts or questions, comments about kind of the blessings of the tribe? Don't know how much I have more to add to that. But you just see, right before Moses dies, he blesses them and gives them kind of a blessing from God to protect themselves, to enlarge their territory, things of that nature. Now notice, this is really powerful. And if you really notice, verse 26 to 29 are basically Moses' last words to the people right before he dies. So this would be pretty impactful, you would think, to the tribe. And he basically ends with, there is none like God. God is the one you need to worship. He is, your whole life needs to be dedicated to Him based on who He is. So you see that in verses 26, maybe there through 27. So you have, He rides in the heavens to help out His people. He is eternal. He is a dwelling place. You are underneath as the everlasting arms, kind of protecting them. And He drove out the enemy and said, destroy. So Moses' last words to the people is, dwell on who God is. And that'll make all the difference. When you're scared about these giants or these fortified cities, focus on, there is none like God. He can protect. He's eternal. He's in the heavens riding over. He has everlasting arms. And that's really helpful. When we go into our battles, right, against Satan, and he's scheming against us, what do we rely on? Sometimes we rely on our own ability, our own strength, and usually we get whooped, right, whenever we do that. So Moses is telling them, you focus on who God is. And that's going to make all the difference. Powerful, powerful last words. And then he, in 28 and 29, he reminds them, you are so blessed. You are so blessed because of God. Look at all the blessings that you have because of God. Israel, you get to dwell in security. Israel gets the benefits of the land, land flowing with milk and honey. God also blesses them with the dew from heaven. There is no other people like Israel. Right? You are a very unique group. They are a people saved by the Lord. God is your shield and help. God is the sword of your majesty. No other people can say those things. Think about all these blessings that you have from God. Their enemies are going to cringe before you because they've heard about who your God is and what He did to the Egyptians. And you will tread upon the high places. Don't fear because you don't have the upper hand geographically. You're going to tread the high places. Think about who God is, how powerful He is, and think about your blessings. And those are kind of the last words before God takes Moses up on a mountain and buries him himself. Thoughts or comments on chapter 34 is the death of Moses and basically handing off the baton to Joshua, the next leader of the people. And so in verses 1 through 8, you have the death of Moses. So God took him to Mount Nebo to overlook the promised land. Remember what God keeps telling Moses? You can't go in. So God is merciful enough to let Moses see the land. And so from this point, it's kind of a central location on the east, right next to Jericho. You can kind of see, if you're up high enough, I don't know how tall Mount Nebo is, and kind of seeing the land. And it says, to the top of Pisgah. I don't know exactly what that is. If that is a kind of a mountain on a mountain, on Nebo, if that's like a place on Mount Nebo. It also, Pisgah could be kind of the top part of a mountain. So sometimes we sing songs about Pisgah, right? So this is what this is referring to. So we are on Mount Pisgah, according to the songs, and we are overlooking our promised land, the land that we will get to possess, right? When we cross over the Jordan. So looking at kind of the first few verses there, we kind of get how Moses is seeing the land. So he starts from Gilead as far as Dan. Gilead would be the land to the east of the Jordan. So kind of the non-promised land part, if that makes sense. And then all the way to Dan. Dan is located far north. So he kind of starts If I'm on Mount Pisgah, and this is the Jordan River here, he kind of starts looking this way and starts looking, and there's Dan. And then from Dan, from Naphtali, and from the land of Ephraim and Manasseh. So now he's going kind of north to more northwest, if that makes sense. So he's basically looking at the land in a counterclockwise position, if that helps. Judah, as far as the western sea. So the western sea would be what? What would be the western sea? So, yes, the Mediterranean Sea, the Great Sea, it's sometimes called. So Judah would have been basically right across from him at that point. And then he goes to the Negev and the plain of the Valley of Jericho. So notice he starts in Jericho and ends in Jericho. So it's kind of looking just kind of counterclockwise, viewing the land in that way. So the text says he still had good eyesight, which maybe helped him kind of view this land. So this is the land, God says, that I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Why do you think God would mention that? What's the purpose of that? This is the land that I promised 400 years ago to those three men. Exactly. This is a God you can trust. You can count. If God says it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I'm about to fulfill a promise that I gave 400 years ago. And you get to see it. You don't get to step in it, but you do get to see it. It's neat. This is kind of always a neat thing to me. This is kind of bookends the book of Deuteronomy. If you notice chapter 1, verse 8, that verse also mentions how I swore to give this land to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And now kind of 8 verses in the book, he mentions this, and then about 8 verses almost to the end, he kind of mentions the same thing. And then isn't that what this book is about? This is right before they are to possess that land. So it makes sense to me that how this promise kind of bookends the book. Everything else in between is, this is how you keep the land. So this is what I'm promising, is what I'm giving you. And so Deuteronomy, of course, is a speech right before they enter the land. And then God buries Moses in the land of Moab. Far as I know, I think this is the only time God buries someone. So he takes care of Moses, and no one knows where Moses is buried. But he died healthy, right? Full of vigor, and his eyesight was good. So Jude 9. And I don't know exactly what to make of this, but I thought I'd throw it out there, free of charge. So Jude verse 9, only one chapter, makes mention of this. And so this is what Jude 9 says. But Michael the archangel, when he disputed with the devil and argued about the body of Moses, did not dare pronounce against him a railing judgment, but said, "The Lord rebuke you." So we kind of get a little glimpse into the heavenly places where we see Michael the archangel and the devil arguing over the body of Moses. So you do with that whatever you wish to do. But it's interesting nonetheless. Let me ask this question. Who wrote Deuteronomy? Okay, Moses. Who wrote Deuteronomy 34? It's hard to say Moses, right? I don't think Moses, and then Moses died. Uh-oh, you know, wait, what's that? What's going to happen? Now, it's possible that he could have just kind of written this, and in the past tense, as though it's already, it's going to happen. It's good as it is. So, some people will use it, why I bring this up, some people will use this as, well, see, you can't really trust the Bible, because you say that Moses wrote the Pentateuch. Moses wrote the first 5 books. And here we have Moses dying, And it's all in the past tense, verse 6. He buried him, God buried him in the land of Moab, but no man knows his burial to this day. How can Moses write that? Well, who said Moses had to write every single, maybe Joshua? A lot of people think Joshua kind of jumped in and helped. Did someone go back and kind of update things? If you look at Genesis chapter 14 and in verse 14, Genesis 14, 14, this is an interesting kind of text, and this is not the only time in Genesis that you see something like this happen. But it says, Genesis 14, 14, when Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led out his trained men born in his house, 318, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. Now, where was Dan? He hasn't been born yet. That's a problem. And he's going as far, went as far as Dan. Well, basically, that is to help us understand where that is, right? So, is it okay if someone kind of goes in and kind of maybe, I'll say update, is that okay? And says, this is the location that he was referring to. I'm fine with that. But I'll kind of let you think about some of those things. But I thought I'd bring up some of those things that maybe you may hear. People say, we can't trust this.
We believe this. He was inspired by God, so
right.
He could have known things.
Yes. Yeah, that is certainly a possibility that he is kind of showing that this is kind of for the future. You may not know where Dan is to my audience, but future audience will know that. That's a possibility. But anyways, I may have kind of muddied the water where I didn't need to. Okay, so Joshua takes over in verse 9 to 12. Let me backtrack really quickly. Go ahead.
When Isaiah was written, Jerusalem wasn't there. It wasn't called that anyway. I mean, there's so many instances.
Sure. Right. You'll see that kind of throughout Genesis a lot. Notice where it says, verse 5, so Moses, the servant of the Lord, died in the land of Moab according to the word of the Lord. What a great title, right? Here is Moses, and he is a servant of the Lord. Remember how Paul would often introduce himself before a book. This is Paul, a bondservant of Christ. That's what we are, and that's what we try to attain to be. We're nothing more than servants, and that's a great thing to say of Moses. He was a servant of the Lord. Lord buried him. So then Joshua takes over in verses 9 through 12. Moses laid. Or go ahead. Yes, sir.
Moses was in the prime of his life.
Yes.
So to speak,
yes.
120 years old.
Yes.
Because of God.
That's exactly right. So God was giving him the strength and everything that he needed to lead these people. Yes, sir.
His eyesight was still good.
Yeah.
If you live long enough, eventually you're going to get cataract. As far as I know, they didn't have treatment for that back then, so.
Right. So, did you see?
His eyesight was dim.
Sure. Right. Yeah, so you see God's blessing upon Moses.
Moses talked to God face to face because he was in the tent. He was the only one
Sure, he went up on Mount Sinai with him.
And so his testimony is like the apostles. They were with him from here to here.
Yeah, and Moses and Caleb would have been the old men of the group, right? Everyone else died off. Moses' life can be broken into three parts, 40-year parts, right? First 40 years in Egypt, and next 40 years in the wilderness, not wandering yet, but as a shepherd, and then the last 40 years leading the people of Israel. So the best for last, or however you want to think that. Yes, ma'am. So maybe the idea of God blessing him for this moment, so that he could see. Yeah, good. Yes, sir.
Another option is, if you think about it, most of the ones we read about were not really educated people. They had assistants that did the writing for them. They would tell them what to write. Paul even did that.
Sure.
Paul was educated, but he did have someone writing for him.
Yes. Yeah, good. That's certainly a possibility. I like that. Okay, so 9 to 12 before the bell rings. Has the first bell already rang? No, okay. So I got 2 minutes. All right, so Joshua takes over. Moses kind of laid his hands on him. And what does Joshua receive? A spirit of wisdom. Yes. Yeah, like the apostles. And maybe another thought of Elijah and Elisha, kind of receiving that spirit. Why not a spirit of strength or a spirit of courage? Why a spirit of wisdom? Well, good, exactly. And he's going to need it as the leader, right? Of these people, it reminds you of Solomon. Right? God blessing him. I want wisdom so I know how to judge your people. I need wisdom so I know how to lead. So very, very important. The children of Israel listened to him, and Joshua obeyed all God had commanded Moses. So kind of passed on, this is, there's a lot of things that God told Moses to tell Joshua, right? And we already kind of looked at some of those. He's going to obey, but he had the respect of all of Israel. Everyone listened to him. But there's only one Moses, right? There's no one quite like Moses. So what are some things that sets Moses apart in these verses?
The length of time to me is
40 years. 40
years. And he had just a direct relationship with God.
Yes, yes. And so direct, it was face-to-face. Yeah. And that is, no one else could really say, I had a kind of a face-to-face communication with God. Remember, he would go into the veil and then all that. So that set him apart. What else set him apart?
The signs and wonders he did in Egypt.
Yes. So you think about the 10 plagues and what Moses did with Pharaoh and all those things. There's really no one that's going to top that. And it also says the signs, the mighty powers that he did, not in Egypt, but where? Among Israel. So, I mean, he continued to do things for the Lord, like water from a rock, like manna, and all these things, fiery serpents. So there's not going to be another Moses. Yes, sir. Good. Yes, he did. And he stood up for the people when God wanted to wipe them out. So he was a great mediator in that way. Yes, ma'am.
And he also talked to God. God was going to destroy the Israelites and make another nation.
Right.
And Moses.
Start with Moses. Yes. And so when it says that there will arise a prophet like me, like Moses, that's a big deal. right? Until Jesus kind of took that, and that was a major statement to be made. All right, so Lord willing, next week we'll cover the entire book of Deuteronomy. I don't know how, but we're going to give it a good shot. So look forward to studying that with you, and then we'll jump into Joshua in a couple weeks. Thank you.